Hi, welcome to Indiana Weekend with John Strauss. This is a kind of radio magazine show about the interesting places and intriguing people in our part of the state. We get out of the studio and onto the road to find the kind of radio you don't hear so much anymore. Stories off the beaten path and usually away from the top headlines. We're always interested in your thoughts. Drop us a note at indianaweekend@gmail.com. And just a reminder, in case you hadn't noticed, this is Pledge Week. If you've joined us as a member, thank you for supporting not only Indiana Weekend, but helping make possible Morning Edition, All Things Considered, and the great variety of public radio shows that are only possible because of your generosity. If you haven't joined, pick up the phone now. Be part of the family. 800-646-1812. 1-800-646-1812 or indianapublicradio.org. Thank you. This is Halloween season. It's not just trick-or-treat and funny costumes anymore. This is prime time for people in the growing field of, well, ghost hunting, I guess you'd say. Now, I don't believe in ghosts or UFOs, but I find the people who go after this sort of stuff kind of interesting. We'll talk with an honest-to-goodness ghost hunter, who's a police officer in his day job, in just a bit. But first, Halloween means big business on screen. Already, this year's horror crop of movies includes Evil Dead, The Lords of Salem, Hell Baby, Texas Chainsaw 3D, you know, all the high-concept stuff. Somewhere on the list is a movie by an Indiana filmmaker recently featured at Paracon, the paranormal conference held at the Indiana State Museum in Indianapolis. The movie is Asylum, The Lost Footage, and the auteur is Dan T. Hall. He started out making documentaries, but now sounds like a believer.
So tell me about your latest film.
It's called Asylum, The Lost Footage, and it is a experimental piece, but it's a narrative, but it's a documentary-style kind of narrative, where a bunch of ghost hunters, amateur ghost hunters, go into an abandoned asylum in search of the folklorish legend of the Lady in White. And what they know about the history of the place is there's some teens that have been gone missing and not shown up, but that's even more intriguing to them, so they want to go check it out. So they go, and they go missing, and we don't find their footage until later. Construction workers are tearing down the place, and they find some of the footage, and now we piece together their story. So it's based on interviews with doctors and detectives, and then the actual footage that we found.
Where did you get the idea from this?
I've been doing these films at the IMAX now since 2006. And my daughter and I were just kind of kicking around some stuff to do for this year. And I said, you know, why don't we try to make it a narrative instead of a straight-up documentary? I've got a documentary we're going to show here, which is all real, but I thought, why don't we do that? And she had just finished a movie called Burdens that was directed by Michael Noir, great guy, and there was a good group of cast there. They had great chemistry, and I thought, well, I could take them, a bunch of young guys, and we'll put them together, and we'll outfit them with GoPro cameras. We'll come up with an outline, and we send them in there. And so a lot of what we get...
Sent them in...
To the asylum,
yeah. To a real asylum
that's been closed, that's haunted. So the reactions that we got are typically all real. And even some of the EVPs, which are those electronic voice phenomenons that I've been getting in all my other documentaries, we got some incredible EVPs there, and we weren't trying for that. So I don't know. It was pretty creepy.
And the setting for all this, Central State, the former Central State mm-hmm. Hospital on the west side of Indianapolis.
Right. As a matter of fact, one of the buildings that we were in has been torn down now.
And part of your ideas for this came from a time when you were at this location.
It's kind of come full circle for me because my film that I had on Showtime, Little River Rats, my daughter starred in, and we were shooting out at Central State. But at that point, I had no idea what about paranormal.
Little River Rats was not a scary movie. It was not a paranormal.
No, it was a family film. Showtime Family is what it was on. So, I mean, G-rated, that kind of thing.
So you're out there shooting at this closed former insane asylum.
And we are like, I'm just making a movie, you know. But everybody else is getting edgy, and I can't think, what's going on? And I look down at my watch, and it says, you know, Friday the 13th, right?
Come on.
Swear to God. And it was a full moon that night as well, or close to. And as the night progressed, everybody just got crazier and crazier. It was just the most bizarre thing. And none of this was planned. I didn't know anything about paranormal or spirits or whatever. I'd seen a ghost when I was younger, but I just, you know, wrote that off.
But when you say people were getting crazier and crazier, what do you mean?
one of the guys that was on the crew wanted to leave, and I said, you can go, but I just want to assure you that there's really nothing to be afraid of here. And he's facing me, and behind him we had propped open one of those doors that's pneumatic, you know, how they kind of open and lock on their own. And I put my hand on his shoulder. I said, seriously, there's absolutely nothing to worry about. And right then that door just shut on its own. And I didn't tell him that, but my eyes kind of bugged out a little bit. I'm sure he saw that. So in any event, there was just enough crazy stuff to kind of warrant going back there. And this narrative piece then was that we just did now, Asylum, the Lost Footage. You know, my daughter got to kind of go back and experience what I had been experiencing there. So, and I thought that was kind of interesting. And
this is your daughter, Molly. She's 20 years old, an IU student, and a criminal justice major, not a...
No, yes.
I mean, level-headed.
Yeah. Oh, my God. You know, she's got a minor in Spanish and a criminal justice major. So she's not about ghost hunting, but it's intriguing. And the evidence sometimes is overwhelming, especially if you get in a place that's got a lot of activity. I mean, there are things that happen that you just can't explain.
Come on. Now, you didn't start, like you said, this all sort of began for you. You were making a family movie for Showtime and these things. Did there come a time in which you were in the underground tunnels over there or something?
Well, when we were doing our investigation, when I actually took the ghost hunters and the psychics back in, I didn't know at the time, but we were there, but there are 5 miles of tunnels underneath Central State. In the early days at Central State, they believed in a lot of things that today we would find just horribly shocking, the treatment that they gave patients. And one of the things that I read about was that they thought that if you deprived humans of human contact and sunlight, that would somehow cure them of their malady at that particular time. So consequently, they had rooms down there that had shackles and stuff, dirt floors, and they would just put patients down in there. And so
shackle them to the walls.
Yes, there were shackles down in there. And so you would hear stories about how you could, you know, it's written in books and stuff where people are walking through and they would hear, you know, screaming and howling and all kinds of crazy stuff like that.
Doesn't it seem that there are a lot of documentaries or cable shows and so forth about paranormal activities?
I think people are becoming more aware of just that sixth sense about themselves. And when they see a show about it, they're even more intrigued. I think people have shut that off for so long, thinking, I don't know, that just was, that was just a creak or something. But then, you know, they kind of really think about it, it could have been something else. There are two kinds of people in the world, I believe. And there are people that have seen a ghost and that are about to see a ghost.
Now, you saw a ghost a long time ago, but in the midst of all of these other things that you're doing, I mean, you're putting yourself in a position to see them, right? So any unusual noises in the night, that kind of thing? You said EVPs?
Yeah, I have tried to insulate myself from all this. Like, I'm the filmmaker fly on the wall, so these people are the ones that are on the front lines, so I'm just there. But we did take a trip to St. Joe, Missouri for Ghostville 2, and there were some things that happened there, and it's a long story, but to make it short, I think we came face to face with some really demonic thing that had actually attached itself and attacked pretty much everybody that was there. This is the first time I'd ever worked with all these people, and it took me, you know, days, I believe in God, and I pray quite a bit, but it wasn't until I had actually gone to a priest to get, and it sounds crazy, to get blessed, that this darkness, whatever this was, lifted off me, and it was immediate. So there is good in the world, and I search that out and seek it and try to be comforted by that, but we have to also be aware that there's a lot of evil.
Indianapolis filmmaker Dan T. Hall just out with a movie called Asylum, The Lost Footage, about a group of ghost hunters in a haunted former insane asylum. What could go wrong, right? More from Dan at his website, ghostville.us. Just ahead, the most normal-sounding ghost hunter with one of the scariest stories we've heard about things that go bump in the night.
Indiana Weekend, real radio from just down the road. Look for that name on Facebook and drop us a line to let us know what you think at indianaweekend@gmail.com.
Well, my name's Dwayne Datsman, and I'm here at the IMAX for the Paracon. Dan Hall asked me to come speak about EVP for the evening, just a few minutes talk on it.
tell me what kind of experiences you've had as a, is it fair to call you a paranormal investigator?
Or? Pretty much. Yeah, we do. We do the ghost hunting and mostly specializing in EVP. Kind of gave up on the video and photography because it was hard to capture anything on it.
What does EVP mean? What's that refer to?
Oh, the EVP is electronic voice phenomena. It's like when you, we're using recorders, and sometimes the voice is audible, but for the most part, you don't hear anything until you play your recording back, and there'll be a voice or maybe music, something you didn't hear that wasn't present. A lot of people try to dismiss it as TV, radio signals, or something, but we've been in such isolated places or get distinct responses to a question that you know that something's there answering you. It's not a radio or a TV signal that you're picking up.
Did there come a time when maybe you were a skeptic and there was an incident or a time when you found yourself thinking, wow, there's something here?
Well, I think it's the very first EVP that you actually capture, or you're with them and you record it, because my sister had wanted me to take her to a location. She didn't know where it was at, but I did. So I take her out there, and I'm, you know, never been ghost hunting before, but she's been, and I said, well, how long does it take you to get an EVP? You know, so, oh, some people, it takes a long time. We're out there, and 5 minutes later, we jump back in the car and play back, and we got a voice on the recorder. And that's creepy. We're out here in the middle of nowhere, no other souls around, and we got a voice on here, you know, when she asked, you got a message for somebody, and it says, Kathy. And then she says, what do you want to tell them? And it says, tell Kathy I love her. And, you know, your first EVP, it really creeps you out. And I've done that with some friends, taking them ghost hunting, and then when they hear their first EVP, it shakes them up, because this isn't supposed to be there. You know, there's nobody else out there. How do you get their voice from out of the nowhere?
And what you're doing is you're picking up audio, but are you saying that at the moment that something happens, you may not hear it, you sometimes hear it later on playing back?
That's correct. For the majority of the times, you don't hear what may be a response to you or pick up some of these other sounds. And even at that, we've been had on occasions where we audibly heard footsteps or other sounds or people talking, and yet when we play it back, it's not there. So how do you explain not picking it up when these things are so sensitive that I can pick up other people talking in the next room? But then there's other times when you don't hear anything and you play it back and you go, wow, there's a voice answering me there. It gave a definite response.
Have you ever, in doing this, picked up information that you later through research you found out, oh, this is what they're talking about?
Well, we had one really great experience. Just on a lark, there's an old abandoned high school, and I've always wanted to go into it. I thought, well, what more energy could there be? You know, kids playing, you know, all the teenage angst and whatnot. So we go in there, there's five of us, and at one point we're in the gymnasium, and it's getting late, we're kind of bored, and we're all spread out. We got seven tape recorders running. I'm holding two of them. I play them back later, and one of mine has a guy singing on it. He goes on for about a minute and a half. He fades in and out. He's real low. And we don't know it because we're talking, joking. But when he plays back, you can hear this man singing. Well, a couple months later, I find out that the music teacher died in the gymnasium during the Christmas school program. And I thought, well, what's the chance? Is this man singing from 1962 or whatever year it was when he passed away there in the gym? So it was really unusual. And we also had, in that same gymnasium, it sounded like a pep band. The old 50s, 60s, when you used the tubas and whatnot. So it was a pretty neat experience in there. And it matched up with something that actually happened there.
Does this give you the kind of the willies when you're out? You know, I guess you're in a big group of people. That helps, right?
No, I try and avoid big groups. I started off with just my sister and I, and then we got in with some other ghost hunting groups that did have large. And that became social hour, so it was very hard to separate noise from. So we went back to 2 to 5 people, and it makes it so much easier. You recognize voices, you know where people are at, you can eliminate them. And when I set out multiple tape recorders, then I can also eliminate what sounds like an EVP on one recorder. Second one picks it up even better, and you go, oh, that was so-and-so talking back in the background. So it helps to have numerous ones running.
Have you ever seen a ghost?
I would like to say yes, I have. Down at Waverly Hills not too long ago, Gary and I were up on the third floor, and it was a...
I don't know what Waverly Hills is.
Waverly Hills is the sanatorium down by Louisville, Kentucky. It's been on taps, ghost hunters. A lot of people go there every year, every weekend, every month, you know. So we've been down there a couple times.
So set the scene. Help us understand. You went down there day or night?
Oh, it was evening. We started off about 8 o'clock, and I don't remember what time of the night it was, but Gary and I got separated from the rest of our group. We had about 10 of us hunting this large building, and we're on the third floor, and we started yelling, "Hey, nurse, you know, Roy Henry down here is choking. We need some help." And we look down the hallway, and you see this just a... It's about 5 feet tall, but it has no arms or legs. It's just a long oval, white shape. And it's meandering, like going back side to side down the hallway, and it's coming towards us. And as it gets closer towards us, it lights up or starts to glow even brighter. And at which point, when it got really close, I started backing away because I've never seen something like this before. And my friend, he's kind of glued to the spot, and he goes, "It's coming closer." And he turns around, he sees me about 6 feet behind because I'm backtracking. I don't know what this thing is. But it was kind of interesting as it got really close, and then it just like popped and went out. So we play our tapes back later, and there is distinct sounds of heels clicking like on a tile floor. So we're wondering if we did pick up a nurse seeing this white object that's just floating down the hallway, and then with the clicking on the thing, I thought maybe it was that.
Duane Datzman, police officer by day and paranormal investigator in his spare time, talking about some of their adventures. He's worked with filmmaker Dan T. Hall, who's back next to talk about some of the odd locations he's been to, including the Monroe House in Hartford City that creeps people out, along with the haunted jail up there.
Something strange in your neighborhood.
This is Indiana Weekend with John Strauss on Indiana Public Radio.
My name is Dan T. Hall, and I'm at the Paracon 2013 at the IMAX Theater at Indianapolis, Indiana, and we're here for the premiere of my new film, Asylum, The Lost Footage.
Some of the other places that you've been to, so we've got the former insane asylum, the privately owned museum in Henry County, various houses I think you've been to, various locations.
Yeah, you'll see in Ghostville 2, the Monroe House, which is up in Hartford City, and that is a house where these people bought to renovate it, to rent it, and as soon as they started tearing into things, you know, they were getting kicked and pinched and all kinds of stuff, and workmen would run out and not come back kind of thing. So that's a drive that people can go in about an hour, and you know they'll let you go through the house. You know, contact them. There's an old jail in Hartford City. You can also tour and spend the night in, and that's haunted. So we've been to a lot of crazy places. That's for sure. I mean, and there's never a shortage. I mean, there are a lot of places that, like you said, I think you know more people are into the kind of ghost thing now. But there are a lot of places that are definitely getting spookified.
You're not a ghost hunter yourself. You're sort of a documentarian. You're trying to capture and record some of this for people. Has there come a time when you said to yourself, something's really going on here?
Well, the St. Joe piece that I was talking about, there was a Catholic priest who I believe was possessed and had issues with the house he was renovating and this, whatever thing was in the basement. And I believe if you go in one time unsuspectingly and you find out that while you're in there you need to get out, that you get a pass. But if you willingly go back in once you know, then I think you're inviting that evil in. I did not go back, and believe me, I was in Haiti during the revolution. I mean, I've been to some pretty tight places, but there was just something very overwhelming, that gut feeling of just do not go back in there. And I didn't, the psychics didn't, a couple of the guys that you'll see here tonight, Living Dead, they're great guys coming from Ohio. They went back. And immediately when they went into this house, the priest was taking him through. He starts speaking in Latin and banging the floor, summoning the spirit out. Now, that's a whole other level for me, and I don't know if I really want to embrace that too much, you know.
The folks who are ghost hunters or paranormal investigators, are they for real?
I believe there are different levels, and I think the people that do it, that are on a regular basis, they get to be professionals pretty quickly, I think. And there are a lot of great people that are doing it. And it's the kind of thing, too, that I believe that you can just go out as long as you get your protection and all that kind of stuff. But I think you can go out and have fun with it on a weekend, that kind of deal. So it is sort of a, you know, weekend warrior kind of thing. But the people that we'll have here today, you know, they're pretty professional. And they travel and they do it. And, you know, they know what's going on. So, and it's good to have them with you when you're filming, because they can, if they start running, then you probably should start running.
There's something in our imagination and in dark places. The oldest tavern in Indiana, I think it's called the Slippery Noodle in downtown Indianapolis, has a basement that I remember the owner was, we were down there doing a story about it, and he said, it's this little room here that really freaks people out. And I went and stood in this small closet-like brick space. And, you know, whether there's anything paranormal or not, you certainly, your mind is in the right position to imagine that there is.
Absolutely. And that is probably, you know, 60% of it, or maybe more. And I think people tend to want to be scared. And that's just part of our nature. I think they like the contrast between scared and not. And then the other part of that, I think, you know, you tune into it as much as you want to. It's always there. I think the frequencies are always out there. They're, you know, like we have cell phones now that transmit stuff, and it doesn't just stop because your phone's off. That's still being transmitted here and there. So depending on how you can pick it up is what you're going to get.
Indianapolis filmmaker Dan T. Hall, whose movie Asylum, The Lost Footage, is about the footage left behind by ghost hunters exploring a haunted, abandoned, insane asylum. Sounds a little like Blair Witch Project, the kind of thing that might be popular some places this time of year. I'm a skeptic, but I still wouldn't care to investigate the spooky hallways of an abandoned anything at night. Something bad always happens when they do that in the movies.
Suddenly, to my surprise,
he did the mash.
He did the monster mash.
The monster mash.
It was a graveyard smash.
He did the mash.
It caught on in a flash.
He did the mash.
He did the monster mash.
Well, that's our show for today. I'm John Strauss. Big thanks to our producer, Marcus Jackman. Glad you could join us this time, and hope you'll stay in touch. If you find yourself pursued by spirits, dodging ectoplasm, or simply in need of a spiritual pat on the back, drop me a note at indianaweekend@gmail.com. And just a reminder, this is Pledge Week. If you've joined us as a member, thank you for supporting not only Indiana Weekend, but all the truly great public radio shows that are only possible because of your generosity. Thank you. If you haven't joined, pick up the phone now. Be part of the family. 1-800-646-1812. 1-800-646-1812 or indianapublicradio.org. Thank you, and thanks for being with us today, and have a great week. Until we meet again on the next Indiana Weekend on Indiana Public Radio, I'm John Strauss.
So can I ask, what do you get out of this?
I think it's the unknown aspect of it. What are you going to see next? What might you hear? What is it like on the other side? How does this work? There's a lot of questions we don't have answers for, and I doubt if we'll ever get them until we cross over, but it's just an interesting, like a hobby, you know, what's out there? What are we going to see next?
Indiana Weekend with host John Strauss of the Ball State Journalism Department. Our show is engineered at Indiana Public Radio, produced by Marcus Jackman. Major support for Indiana Weekend comes from Dillman's Furniture, Muncie, serving East Central Indiana with home furnishings from Flex Steel, Bassett, and Simmons Beautyrest. Join us again next week for Indiana Weekend with John Strauss here on Indiana Public Radio.